This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Back in July of this year, the UN CEDAW Committee published a list of issues and questions directed to the Malaysian government on the status of women's rights in the country. I find out what these issues are and how Malaysia has responded to the committee and what lies ahead for Malaysia in the upcoming 2018 review from women's rights activists Hani Tan and Sharina Sharif, who are with Empower and Sisters in Islam, respectively. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet.
Hi, Juliet.
So the both of you, headed to Geneva back in July, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, for once in Geneva when the sun is shining.
I guess for somebody who doesn't quite understand what CEDAW is, maybe one of you could explain what it is, give us a brief history of it.
I think essentially CEDAW is the International Bill of Rights for Women. So it covers all aspects of rights. So it's not just about your social, economic, cultural, it's about civil, political rights as well. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the first few articles of CEDAW, it actually sets out to explain, you know, what is discrimination against women, what are state obligations, and explain a bit more about, you know, temporary special measures, which I think in Malaysia, we tend to know it as affirmative action.
Ah.
And that has such a bad, taste in people's mouths.
Yes.
But it's, theoretically, it's actually a good tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a matter of how you implement it, how you monitor it. That is, I think, where we kind of like just fell flat on our face with our affirmative action.
Yeah. I think CEDAW is something very positive for women. I mean, it actually sets out the principles of equality, which was not very, very evidence-specific to women as a marginalized community in certain respects. So that is something extremely positive. So it talks about substantive equality, equality in fact, in results, in the way things actually pan out, rather than just giving what we see, what we think is equal on the face of it. So that is extremely useful for us as a tool to look at our laws, to look at our policies, and to look at how we go forward in terms of how we rank inequality in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think in most countries, Malaysia included, they like to think that we have equality once you have a law or the constitution provides for it. So this is what we call de jure equality. That means, is there someone in the books, who knows how to use it and what does it mean,
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what CEDAW is about. CEDAW looks about, Sherry said just now. Besides all of that, it actually talks about the equality of opportunities, So it's not good enough to just have the law there. So what does it mean? Does it mean that equality only applies when it's the government that's doing the discrimination? Then what about, what we call private actors, companies, husbands, boyfriends,
Mm-hmm.
Aren't they also liable when they're discriminating against women?
Yeah.
And what's the role? What's the state obligation in all of this?
Yeah, state obligation, I think, is a very critical part of CEDAW. So it actually makes the state obliged to either stop certain things from happening or to actively pursue either laws or policies to ensure equality actually occurs. So
mm-hmm.
it's actually an obligation on the state party that have signed up to the convention. So that is extremely empowering for the states that use it at least, and for advocates for women's rights such as us that have like a reference point
mm-hmm.
to mm-hmm. ensure equality is actually de jure.
Yeah. De facto, yeah.
So de facto, actually
what we really want is when we talk about state obligations, it's always about respect, protect, fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
So the fulfill part is the one that's when we say, equality in terms of the results.
Yeah.
So there's no point in having a law or policy, but there are no good results. So no good law, lah.
Yeah.
Then, or maybe it's not the law that's a problem, it's the implementation of it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about respecting, protecting and fulfilling, it's kind of like a 360 look at rights, So it's not just having it there, it's making it work and enabling the women to actually enjoy their rights, all rights.
What took Malaysia so long to sign to? Because we only signed, I think, in 1995. I think even that was seen as a watershed in the advancement of women in the country. Or am I wrong in saying that?
No. Yeah, I think that was. And I think it's also very closely tied up to the whole thing that was happening in around the world at that time. Mm-hmm. You know. So there was this huge meeting in Beijing and people were like kind of going off there and trying to, you know, everybody say, oh, women's rights are human rights. And so what does that mean? You know,
I
would say 1995 is okay. Lah. You know, at least we got that. And the same year, we also acceded to the Convention on Rights for the Child. And then more recently, the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. And then we came to a screeching halt. That's the end. No more. So that out of 9, we're only like 3. I think we're at the level of Myanmar.
Oh dear.
Yes,
that
indeed.
Puts it into context. Yes. What are the main areas of women's rights that CEDAW focuses on?
All aspects, yeah?
Yeah, practically all aspects, because it requires equality across the board in any area where a woman participates in. So in the professional aspect, in the social aspect, in the family aspect as well. It actually says that it calls for equality within the family, which mm-hmm. is, I guess a concept that we need to make real here in Malaysia. So yes, it's practically cuts across, and it also looks at other marginalised groups. It looks at migrant workers. It looks at trafficking of women in the country and disabled women, etc., etc. So it's across the board, really.
And I think the good thing about CEDAW is that it's very broad. So if you were to actually read, like maybe this, what we call the substantive articles 1 to 16, you will not see things like violence against women, sexual orientation and gender identity rights. It's not there. Mm-hmm. But how CEDAW works is that the CEDAW committee, the committee that's actually overlooking the implementation of CEDAW, they will come up with what they call general recommendations, which is when they look at certain articles and they try and expand on it, expound on it. Mm. So, for example, the whole issue about violence against women never mentioned anywhere in CEDAW. Mm-hmm. But they have this General Recommendation 19 that talks about why it is that violence against women is actually discriminatory. Because, you know, when violence is visited upon women, they cannot enjoy all their rights. I mean, just a very simple example is that if you are being whacked by your husband, can you go to work? You know, if you are injured or if you, after a very long time, I expect you to be like quite mentally disturbed, then how are you going to be functioning properly with your family, with the world outside? You know, so they do talk about, then they talk about, you know, what should the government do, right? So General Recommendation 19 talks about then what is violence against women. And more recently, General Recommendation 35 updated this whole concept of violence against women, because it's a very live issue, you know. Yeah. So 35, the General Recommendation 35 is quite interesting now because it talks about the online abuse of women, abuse of women in cyberspace. Mm-hmm. And just because you don't get a whack in your head, you don't get a bruise, no cut, no blood, does that mean you suffer less? You know, and I would say actually you suffer more because nowadays in cyberspace, you will never be forgotten, ever. You know, so in fact, there's this other movements called, you know, the right to be forgotten.
Okay.
Because nowadays, whatever that comes up online, you think you've deleted it, you think it's finished, but it will pop up.
It'll pop up, now, it'll go viral again.
Yeah. And so 35 kind of like brings the whole concept of violence against women into like, you know, the 21st century.
Okay, that's great. So constantly updating, I guess, because, I mean, experiences change, you know, women's lived experiences
technology.
Changed. Yeah, technology, all sorts of things change.
And knowledge about what violence is. It can be, you know, physical violence is the one that we're very familiar with, that we can see the results. But emotional, psychological violence are all hidden, and you need to respect that. That is something that creates loss of opportunity and loss of, you know. And the other thing that CEDAW talks about is access to justice, which is also an issue for women around the world, and other things, simple issues such as equality in having your citizenship. If a foreign woman has, if a Malaysian has a child abroad, can she as easily get citizenship, Malaysian citizenship for her children, mm-hmm. As a man? For example, things that I think perhaps we take for granted that this is what a woman goes through, this is what a man goes through. But CEDAW says no, the process should be the same. That is what substantive equality is about. You should have access to the same policies in the same way, which produces the same results across all sexes.
So what are our obligations, Malaysia, now that we've signed to it? Because I know we signed to it, but albeit with a few
reservations,
yeah. Let's put it that way. I don't think there's no enforcement committee, right? They don't actually have enforcement abilities. Am I wrong?
No international law mechanism has like a real enforcement way to... for example, even if you were to go to international court for, if Malaysia had ratified this other thing called an optional protocol to CEDAW. That means it gives Malaysian women who cannot get any justice in Malaysia to go to Geneva and have their case heard. So then the CEDAW committee works kind of like a court.
Right.
And they have a decision, they have a finding. But ultimately, the CEDAW committee cannot come to Malaysia and, you know, tell the PM, hey, you better do this, otherwise we're going to jail you, you know, or fine you 10,000 ringgit, whatever. It doesn't work like that. The maximum that they can do is we encourage, we suggest, you know, we propose, things like that. So then the government should be doing something. So if you're a responsible government, then you will take those sorts of recommendations seriously.
Right.
You know, and implement them. Mm-hmm. But from our experience with UPR, even accepted recommendations, not sure where they are. Right. So, but in any event, this issue of optional protocol for Malaysia is a non-issue because we have not acceded to the optional protocol.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Hani Tan and Sherina Sharif. They are both women's rights activists. And Hani is with Persatuan Keseluruhan Community Selangor. And Sherina is with Sisters in Islam. She's a program manager there. And we are discussing CEDAW. And the ladies actually went to Geneva to give their recommendations to the UN CEDAW committee. We'll find out more about that after this quick break. You are listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Hani Tan and Sherina Sharif. They are both women's rights activists, and Sherina's with Sisters in Islam. She's a program manager there, and Hani is a lawyer as well as the, shall I call you, savior of...
No, not at all.
She's the rescuer for the law rescuer for the Persatuan Keseluruhan Community.
Lawyer on call.
Lawyer on call.
Well, if certain people stop raiding us, I don't have to go.
Anyway, we are discussing CEDAW, and both of you actually were in Geneva, as we mentioned earlier. I understand that you both were part of a 5-member group that went. Yeah, maybe you can tell me about what happened there.
So we are part of a coalition known as the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality. And the Joint Action Group has come together with some other parties to develop what we call a shadow report. Mm-hmm. So in providing the CEDAW with information from our perspective based on the lived realities that we see, based on the data that we gather in different areas of how women are discriminated. So our function is just to provide additional evidence, materials to enable the CEDAW committee to be in a better position to counter what state parties, are saying about how they meet the requirements in CEDAW. So we had what they call a pre-session briefing where the NGOs were given an opportunity to speak to the committee. This would be the first time in this round of sessions that the CEDAW committee will be holding. The final session will be held in...
The review proper?
The review February next year. Okay. So this is a a sort of a lead up to that. Okay. They will be having meetings with several parties. So Hani and I and three others attended.
And Suhakam as well.
Yes.
Yeah. And Suhakam.
But they had a separate session.
So, okay, so the five of you were from JAG. Is that accurate?
That's yes. right.
Okay, yeah. All right. And how does it work then? I mean, is it just you? Does the government also go? Have they already provided something to the CEDAW committee and you are critiquing that or not quite?
Yeah, so the government provided its self-assessment.
Long-awaited report.
Yes, because it was quite yes. late, right?
Yeah. I think it's about 10 years.
They wrote yes. three reports into one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so...
Shame.
Yeah. This was one of the issues that the CEDAW, you know, mentioned quite publicly, that they were pretty late in their submission. So basically, they submitted something in 2016. So that started the new process, as mm-hmm. it were. So mm-hmm. in response, we are given the opportunity to, you know, voice our comments in with regards to their submission.
Right.
In return, they will have to answer certain questions and then it will lead to the final statement that the CEDAW committee will make with regards to their assessment of how Malaysia conforms and
or does not.
Yeah, or does not conform to the recommendations that they have ratified in the CEDAW convention.
They also wanted to hear from the NGOs also about the gaps, you know, that the government does not mention. Mm-hmm. I would say one of the hugest gaps is the rights of the LGBT. Mm-hmm. So it's like a non-issue that the government is a hot issue with us. And also the other thing about women human rights defenders. I mean, that was specifically a question that was asked of us. You know, how are women human rights defenders being treated in Malaysia?
Right, yeah. right. Can we just be clear on which ministry will have to be the one that submits this report? Is it the women ministry? I'm assuming it will be that one.
I would say that for all international kind of, you know, report submitting and all that, the coordinating ministry is the foreign ministry.
I see. Okay.
But obviously, because this is about women's rights, the women's ministry will I suppose, be a key player. But any official submission, I think, will be done by the foreign ministry.
I see. Okay, all right. So let's get to what, I mean, you guys wrote. You provided a written submission to the CEDAW committee as well as an in-person briefing that we were talking about, highlighting critical areas of concern. So what were the things that you guys highlighted?
I think earlier on, before even this happened, we were trying to shame the government into actually submitting a report. So I think it was in 2005 or something.
Wow,
we actually had a shadow CEDAW kind of report group.
Yeah.
That was, I think, led by WAO and NCWO, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So we had a huge book, you know, about. You know, what's not quite right about women's rights in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So that went in like some time ago. And then the government put in their report last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put in our list of critical issues. And then so we started by giving a framework so that the CEDAW committee members can actually understand where we're coming from. Because what do they have, like 196, 94 countries? So,
yeah.
You know, too much to absorb, right? So like in 2 minutes... And there's like a real clock, kind of like a countdown. So you all like have to like do it fast.
Uh-huh.
So so I think I started out by actually putting a framework, so our legal framework, our constitution, and also the makeup of Malaysia, our race makeup, religion makeup, because ultimately in Malaysia, the religion of Islam and its politicization has huge impact on everyone, whether you're Muslim or non-Muslim. So then after that, we also talked about violence against women, you know, Muslim women's rights. Then we had the rights of the LGBTs. And then we actually honed in then on more specific issues of violence against women, like domestic violence and rape.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at how Islam is impacted even on these international conventions, one of the major issues that the government included in their submission was the fact that certain things could not be changed because of Sharia laws and that they were divine and they were, you know, beyond reproach. So we are countering that way of thinking, giving some opening up the issue, or whether it is in fact Sharia, you know, and whether it actually forms, creates justice and equality as a result of that. So we particularly wanted to touch on this issue and how certain Sharia laws, the impact has naturally been the most discriminatory on women. That is the reality that we have seen over the last, you know, decade or so, or yeah, even more. So,
and the crossover, I think the most serious for all, I would say all married women in Malaysia, you know, Muslim or not, is the fact that in Malaysia, marital rape is not a crime. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at Section 375 of the Penal Code, there is actually an exception that says that if a man has sexual intercourse with a wife, that's not a crime. So it's so bland, sexual intercourse with your wife. So there's no sense of like the force, like the lack of consent, the violence that goes with it. And I think it was in maybe 2007, 8, around that time, there was this huge amendments to the Criminal Procedure Code and the Penal Code. And they set up the Parliament's Special Select Committee. So it was like bipartisan in that sense, you know. Mm-hmm. So you had like opposition members and BN members. But ultimately, they still came up with the same thing to say that they cannot have this crime called marital rape because it's against Sharia law. It's like, what?
Yeah.
It's actually in the report. Yeah. You know, that's what it actually says. Yeah.
If you look
shocking.
At, yeah, if you look at, you know, how this interplay has worked out, you look at issues of child marriage, marital rape that Hani has spoken of. Previously, we had a big fight even on the issue of domestic violence. Mm. And all of it was based on the fact that this is not Islamic. You know, we cannot put it in place and we cannot apply it to all women equally because it's not part of Sharia. You know, these are myths that we need to bring to light and say that, look, who is suffering as a result of these, you know, these laws not being put in place? It's, mm-hmm. It is the women and they are suffering. We can show that they are suffering. We have the information. We know that there is extreme sexual violence that occurs in certain marriages and they have no way out because, you know, this is the requirement of a wife. In a marriage, in a Muslim marriage, this is just, you know, some complete injustice that we need to set right.
And also the debunking of this myth that Sharia law only affects Muslims. It doesn't, because it has crept into criminal law, mm-hmm. Financing. It's gone into so many areas which, you know, I don't know whether that was how our forefathers had envisaged it when we started Malaysia. So, yeah. So when people say, oh, don't worry lah, you know, Sharia law, you're not Muslim, okay what? Yeah. Then you have to say, no, actually, look at how they treat marital rape. Look at how they treat, you know, child marriages. It's really quite shocking.
Unilateral conversion as well.
Yep, that other hot potato.
we'll leave it at that. okay, so I mean, what were the other issues? I mean, this was everything that you guys brought up.
I think that, and we dealt with the questions they wanted to ask. Whether the government had actually consulted us on the new sustainable development goals, mm-hmm. To which we said, yes, they consulted in the sense that they called for meetings, you know. Then you actually, in the same way, like even now, the foreign ministry is actually calling NGOs for consultations on the Universal Periodic Review in a quite unprecedented and systematic way, which I'm quite happy about. But at the same time, so okay, like you have consultations, which is wonderful, you know. And then what, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not so sure. I want to keep going for meetings, and then you know, which doesn't really have a result in the sense that are you going to include tough issues in your next review? Because next year is a huge review year for Malaysia. We have like a double whammy. We have CEDAW in February, and if I'm not mistaken, our Universal Periodic Review with the Human Rights Council in Geneva also.
Oh,
I think it's in October. So, yeah, two biggies.
Exciting, yeah.
Well.
For Malaysia, anyway. But okay, so then following that, the UN CEDAW Committee, they also published a list of issues and questions which were directed to the Malaysian government. Mm. And they said that such information was missing from the government's report to the CEDAW Committee. Could you tell us what that list included?
I'm very happy with the CEDAW report, actually, because it does bring up very critical issues and the way the government in general approaches issues of women's rights. So one of the issues that CEDAW brought up was that there needed to be a broader inclusivity in the issue of women's rights and how government responds to women's rights and discrimination in this regard. So they talked about whether the report that they submitted was discussed in Parliament, whether there were women involved in the discussion, mm-hmm. whether NGOs were discussed in the were brought into that discussion, etc., which is the right way to approach an issue if you wish to, you know, tackle the underlying issues of it. I think CEDAW recognizes that there are cultural practices that are discriminatory, and you know, it's prevalent in many countries across the world. But it is the job of the government to change perceptions, to add training, capacity building, etc., to all those who have an influential role to change approaches towards discrimination. So they also talk about capacity building of the public sector, of the members of government who are deeply involved in issues of women's rights, of judges, of Sharia courts in particular. Actually, they actually mentioned Sharia courts. Violence is another issue that is growing in terms of statistics in Malaysia. They touched on that issue and what was being done to they touched particularly on our issue that there was that one case that where rapist or was allowed to
marry
his victim. So they particularly touched on that and what was being done about that. They touched on how Parliament did not sanction, for example, sexist remarks. I mean, we've heard a lot of that as well. So because this creates another culture of acceptance of certain types of statements against that discriminate or against women. Other areas that they brought out were, for example, in family laws, how are they ensuring that there is equality in terms of the burden of a family? For example, paternal leave mm-hmm. when there, you know, when the mother has a child, that creates equal access to employment for the mother. So those kind of issues, and again, they touched on a lot of issues related to the very marginalized, the refugees, the disabled, the LGBT group, and the violence that was being, you know, demonstrated by public officials towards this minority groups. I think they touched on education and health as well. And a lot of it was in relation to bringing up the issue of the gender sensitivity of the whole Malaysian public officials, you know, whether it be schools, hospitals, etc., on this issue of how to approach discrimination and how to provide and produce equality within, you know, their scope of work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, okay, it sounds very, very encompassing, all-encompassing. It sounds like it sounds to me like they covered all the things that, you know, we're not happy about. Would you agree?
Well, I think it's one thing to talk about it. Uh-huh. And one thing to say, I promise I will do something about it. So mm-hmm. I accept your recommendations. I will take steps to do something. But one of the things that the Malaysian government has failed miserably is actually to put a timeline to things. So when you don't have a timeline, no, esok lusa apa lah, you know?
Mm.
So it's, if you don't actually have a timeline, how are you going to measure? You know, and when do we know whether we've succeeded or we've failed or we're like, you know, half succeeded, and if we're only halfway succeeding, so how can we do better? You know, that sort of thing is actually very frustrating. So even though once every few years we do have a review by, you know, bodies outside of Malaysia, but ultimately it's still back to us, you know, citizens of Malaysia to actually make things work. And the only way in which we can leverage, if at all, is shaming. The whole issue of like shaming our Malaysian government, because now we're actually running for to be on the Human Rights Council again. Yeah. I think for the third time, you know. So if you're going to be on the council, isn't it beholden upon you to actually fulfill the recommendations that you've, you know, accepted and move beyond just fulfilling, but, you know, something more, right? So it's not like doing the minimum, but doing the maximum. And I think that that is where we're really not seeing the results. And I think the one that's really kind of very worrying is, like I said earlier on, about this online violence and the amount of sexist, you know, discriminatory remarks that come out, you know, on your Twitter feed, on your Facebook. It's just incredible. And it just feels that the government's not doing anything about it. So I'm not saying like censor the internet, nothing like that. But I think when you cross the line and you say, let's go and rape this woman, or, you know, I think a few years ago, they said something about Teresa Kok, you know, X amount of money for the first person to go and slap her or something like that. Yeah. I mean, to me, that crosses the line, right?
For sure.
If you want to critique, you say whatever it is you want to vent, go ahead. But when you are inciting other people to commit violence, I think that's problematic.
What are the things that we have done right using CEDAW? I mean, are there examples where, you know, CEDAW was taken, you know, the recommendations from CEDAW taken and, you know, put into law and actually came up with some, you know, good, some good love, for lack of a
better
word.
The best thing that happened with CEDAW is that the Article 8.2 in the Federal Constitution was amended.
Yep.
So Article 8.2 sets out a few grounds on which you cannot discriminate anyone. So after we acceded to CEDAW, we actually amended Article 8.2 so that gender now becomes a prohibited ground on which you cannot discriminate people.
Sure. Yeah. I think going forward as well, we've started some discussion on a Gender Equality Act. That's very positive if it comes through, you know, to actually form the broad framework on what gender equality is about and allows recourse as well where there is discrimination based on gender.
But I'm more in favour of having an Equality Act. Because it's the your discrimination is not just based on your gender, but it intersects with other identities that you have. You know, your race, your sexuality, your, you know, all sorts. So this topic is kind of like, you know, I don't think we have a consensus on you know, what we should or shouldn't have.
Sure.
I think the discussion's out there, but I would feel like an Equality Act is actually more all-encompassing. And if you're going to have a Gender Equality Act, which is very narrow, it may not work so well in the sense that it will enable the government to go out to the international community and say, we have a Gender Equality Act. You know? In the same way that whenever they start a report, oh, we have Article 8.2, you know, and you cannot discriminate on the ground of gender. And then what? Yeah. Private citizens, the non-state actors, discriminate against women left, right and centre because of the way in which they look at constitutional law. So when we say we have the constitutional guarantee of equality, it's only equality in the sense that public authorities cannot discriminate on the grounds of gender. Mm. So companies, private individuals, I mean, how often have you walked around like the shopping mall and they say Chinese, female, sales assistant wanted.
Yeah.
Right? So not only do they like say, oh, you know, the next thing you see is under 18 or under 21. Then you have age, you have race, you have gender all into one. So this is why I was talking about that sometimes you need more than just a Gender Equality Act. You need an Equality Act so you can deal with all these intersecting identities of a person, you know, male or female.
And just going back to CEDAW, I mean, in your own line of work, how do you actually take all of that and translate it into, like, you know, domestic realities? Would you have an example of how you've done that?
I think these are principles that we have taken on board. I mean, I suppose it's a life process in terms of how it realizes itself. But generally, we seek substantive equality as women's rights activists. But CEDAW gives us, I think, an international framework to base our work on, to base our reasons in equality. And what something quite significant that has come out of CEDAW from the perspective of sisters in Islam is this new language of how international requirements such as in CEDAW actually is perfectly in line with Islam. So we have developed that rationale to show where Sharia promotes equality, promotes justice, completely shirks oppression and discrimination. And there are several documents, a lot of research coming out in that regard as well. Because I think the reality is that if a government is very conservative in its approach to Islam, then this is the language they use. Sharia is divine, you cannot change. And an international convention can take a back seat because this is the most important in this country. Mm-hmm. So there is alternative language being developed now. So that is not only useful in the international negotiation process, but useful for us domestically to show, look, this is what Sharia is. And Sharia is not about oppression. But so if you see oppression, then there is something wrong with the law. The law perhaps is not in line with what the Quran is teaching us. So that kind of approach is very healthy for a progressive Islam in the country.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Honey?
For us, us as in the lawyers, us,
yeah.
we actually use CEDAW as like a standard. I think one of the great successes of using CEDAW in Malaysia is having the definition of what is discrimination against women. So because we didn't have that in the past, and because of our common law system, which basically means that besides the parliament and state assemblies that make laws, judges can also make laws where there is a gap. Mm. So at that time in Malaysia, we didn't have a legal definition of discrimination against women. So then in that case, the judge actually then used the CEDAW definition. And so now, de facto in Malaysia, when you talk about discrimination against women, there is a legal definition.
Okay.
So that's one. And of course, the other thing that we're now wending its way through the courts, and now we're at the federal court, is actually trying to see how courts should assess damages for breaches of constitutional rights.
Mm.
So this is the first time that we're actually going to have to deal with this issue, which is really like exciting. So, and it's exciting because, constitutional rights have been like being breached left, right and centre.
Mm.
And one, not often we actually ask for damages, but in Nor Fadila's case, we did. So we posed like three specific questions to the federal court. So even though we couched it within gender discrimination, but I think it may end up being of general applicability. So one of the things that we're actually grappling with is that, do you need to prove damages, specific damages when your rights have been breached? In some jurisdictions in the world, it's like a strict liability sense, like so long as you show that your constitutional rights have been breached, you don't need to show how you suffered. It's just taken that you have suffered.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Then the question will be like, what's the criteria that you want, that you need? The other question that we also posed is, when courts are giving damages, do those damages have to reflect the public outrage that your constitutional rights have been, breached?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if the answer is yes, then your damages will be higher. Also, when we're looking at the quantum, we're thinking at, should that amount then be a deterrent so that there won't be future breaches?
Exactly.
So I think these are the three key questions we're posing to the federal court.
So we need to see what happens there, huh?
Yes.
So what happens now with the whole CEDAW review? I mean, okay, so we have to, the government are supposed to give their written response to the UN CEDAW committee's
Yeah. That's so as a result of the July meeting, the CEDAW committee came up with a list of critical issues.
Yes.
And several questions related to each issue. The government is expected to respond in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And thereafter, we within JAG will be publishing or submitting our report to CEDAW. And and we will look forward to February.
In freezing Geneva.
So the government, they have to, right? They have to give a written response. They must. That is...
Well, within the CEDAW process, they had to do a lot of things.
Okay. All right.
So they have an option. Yeah. If they want to be questioned and evaluated, then don't submit a report. But the fact that they did kickstarts the mechanism for review. Mm-hmm. So for the longest time, like 10 years, we didn't have any. And then the minute they put the report in, then it just the mechanism has a life of its own. And you have to just... Well, you should just follow the deadlines that they set. And I think because by the time our review comes around in February, I suspect Malaysia will already be a member for the third time in the Human Rights Council. So, you know, you just want to be like, oh, we're complying. And actually, right now, we have the special rapporteur on cultural rights. She's here. That's quite interesting, you know, because... it's very rare to get a special procedure from the UN Human Rights Council come to Malaysia officially, you know, to look at the impact of, you know, cultural rights on human rights. So that's quite interesting. So all these things are all opening up.
Okay, everything is cranked up and, you know, the wheels are in motion. So I guess we'll see what happens.
So sometimes when you feel like, why you want to go and engage in all these international mechanisms? Yeah. What's the impact? So the impact is then you have like, you know, the special procedure come to Malaysia. Mm-hmm. We can use whatever we've, acceded to argue in court or to run programs, you know, all sorts of things.
Okay.
The fact that the issues are made public, they're available for everyone to see, assess for themselves, that is a very important process because a lot of these issues are either accepted or ignored or not even known half the time. The average person might not have the exposure to the marginalized groups, for example. So the fact that it comes out in public, we have data, we have evidence, we have stories to tell them, you know, how things have affected a certain movement. That's very, very powerful in this whole process.
And in February, when the review happens, I mean, we will definitely be doing the publicity around that, but they have live webcasts. So you can actually watch, you know, our government officials being reviewed.
Oh, wow.
It's quite... Same thing with the Universal Periodic Review as well. So in this way, technology is really marvellous.
All right, ladies, I think that's about all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me. And I guess we'll catch up again after February 2018.
Great.
Thanks, Julia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Hani Tan and Sherina Sharif. They are both women's rights activists. Hani is with Persatuan Kesedaran Community Selangor or Empower, and Sherina is with Sisters in Islam. And they've been discussing Malaysia's CEDAW 2018, upcoming 2018 review, and you know what we need to do to kind of, well, comply. This has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.